Welcome to the One Fall Podcast. I'm your host, Joel Johnson, and today we are joined by the Crown Prince of Charisma, Mo. How are you today, Mo?
I'm thinking I should be the futurist.
The Mo futurist.
Yeah, the futurist. I think that's an excellent nickname for me, actually. Not the Crown Prince of Charisma isn't very accurate. It is, clearly. But the futurist, because I tend to see what's going to happen way before everybody else and call it. And I'm not 100% accurate, but much like Tony Stark, I am a futurist.
There you go. That'll be your new nickname, because you have called a few things that were very interesting that have turned out to be more close to reality than anyone really thought. And now we're sitting here. As the viewers probably know and the listeners probably know, that you haven't watched much of the main roster, and but I have, so I've seen a little bit.
When you say not much, nothing.
Nothing. like 205 Live?
I still can't keep up with all the wrestling I want to watch. 205 Live I watch, and NXT UK, I'm hoping it'll improve. They made some moves to make do so. And NXT... And then, of course, there's specials and there's old stuff. And then there's stuff ROH and Independence and you know, New Japan and everything else. Like, it's still impossible to keep up, even after I've gotten rid of that. And oh, boy. But that said, I read about it. I listen to podcasts about it. I know everything that's going on. If it was good enough, I'd be back. How was Raw? Was it good enough?
Oh, that was tough. I watched both Raw and SmackDown. And I gotta say, both shows feel so different. And I'm not, there's probably a dozen reasons why both shows feel different. For me personally, I enjoyed SmackDown this week. I thought they did a good job. I liked Joe's promo on Hardy. I liked AJ's promo. I liked Asuka being moved up. I like Becky. I quite enjoy Becky Lynch. There is a house show coming to Calgary on the 9th of December that I will be gleefully attending. And I'm hopeful. I want her health to become a priority, but I'm very hopeful to get to see the man, Becky Lynch, in the ring. But I'm cool seeing AJ and Joe slug it out one more time. I've got no problem seeing that live. But man, I don't know. Raw just... My thing is, and this is part of the thing I want to talk to you about, there's a lot to talk about in the world of wrestling. Things are starting to ramp up, and as that January date fast approaches, as more pieces are kind of floating around and you're not sure where they're going to land for outside of WWE, but with inside WWE, what is the company not doing right now? Like, we always sit here...
Let's make this a 10-parter. I was actually wondering this. Like, okay. I was thinking this when, you know, thinking about the show and whatever. And, I mean, I certainly have my opinions about what they're not doing right, and there's plenty of it. I really would say, let's put it this way. I think they are the worst. They're as badly booked or almost as badly booked as – they're almost as badly booked as WCW was. Or TNA under Russo. Like, as far as the booking logic, they have some better characters. They'll put on a better event. Like a Survivor Series, they'll be able to put on a better event, you know, that type of thing. They can focus for a little while. But like, as far as like day to day, week to week booking, they're terrible. Like, terrible company. As that's right now.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you say?
Yeah, because I feel like at times, because right now they've got the storyline where it's either you're with Corbin or you're against Corbin. And if you're against Corbin, you're getting murdered. And I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's – Corbin's doing an okay job at his role right now. And Drew McIntyre's a killer. I quite enjoy Drew McIntyre. My thing is, and I was going to get your opinion on this, I'm just not as excited about Braun Strowman as I once was. And – knowing that they're building all this stuff up for Braun to come in and destroy these guys, it almost feels a little lackluster, where you're like, okay, Braun's going to come out and destroy these guys, but I'm just not as hyped for it. I'm not as excited for Braun Strowman coming out and destroying them. I don't know what it is. I'm not biting on the storyline that they're currently presenting with this. You're either with us or against us. Because I'm trying to boil it down as simple as possible. Because the biggest thing that WWE does is like they like to convolute things, and they like to have swerves for the sake of swerving us. Sometimes the best thing is just keeping it simple, straight, narrow, and NXT does a really good job of that. And I have seen the NXT taping spoilers. You have not, and you'd rather not know, so we won't be talking about any of that. But from what I've seen, they have a very linear storyline going within NXT for several of their storylines that they have going that work really well and will eventually have a good payoff for you.
How about that? How about that? What a concept.
I know.
What a concept. The thing is, if the WWE, if they're not, when I compare it to TNA and WCW, I mean, it's true. Like, if they were putting on a really good television program, because they want to be a television program, that'd be one thing. But you're not putting on as good a television program as other television programs, and you're not putting on a good wrestling program for wrestling fans, so what's left? Like, if you were to compare this for entertainment value compared to a good television show, maybe not a great show, but just a solid show, you know, FBI or, you know, something like that, that's, you know, New Amsterdam, one of these shows that's just, you know, show on the that's out there, it's not as good. And the thing is, you're not only putting on 3 hours, but you're asking, or, you know, compared to like a lot of other sporting events, it's not as good for 3 hours, but you're asking wrestlers to act, right?
Yeah.
And you wouldn't want to put on a show every week asking actors to wrestle, because it would suck. And you've put so much emphasis on acting and lines, but that's not what these guys are. So it comes back to a lot of what Paul Heyman used to talk about: emphasize somebody's strengths and hide their weaknesses. And when you get somebody like Baron Corbin, you're actually emphasizing his weaknesses.
Yeah.
Because he's not a good actor, and he's not a particularly good wrestler. Even if he's doing a fine enough job within his limited role, with as good as he can be, that's still not very good. But when he was on SmackDown Live, the after show thing, and he used to like get into it with people, he was really good at that.
Yeah.
So it's not that there isn't a place for him or something that he can do. It's that, you know, I mean, as a Tyson Tomko type of big bodyguard guy, I think he'd be fantastic. As the general manager who literally has an hour of screen time on a Monday night, dude,
yeah,
killing everyone.
See, and that's the thing. I wonder, like, I was wondering if Braun's not as over as I thought he was, or if it was who he's going up against, because I just don't feel excited about Braun getting his hands on these guys. Because, A, we've seen this before with Braun and McIntyre, and Lashley's Lashley. I enjoy Leo Rush. Leo Rush is doing I think they found a good spot for Leo Rush. So that's one of the few moments where I'm like, oh, they may have actually kind of found at least a nice little niche for him to be.
He's very talented. You know, the character is very annoying, but it's meant to be. But he is very talented. I like him more on 205 Live, but, you know, his character is a little different there.
And that is the interesting thing, because if you cross Drake Maverick from 205 Live to Monday Night Raw, it's like
this is
going to
piss me off. This is going to piss me off.
Well,
even talking about Drake Maverick and what they do on Monday, and piss is the accurate word.
Yeah. That. Now, I heard a rumor. Did you hear any confirmation? Because apparently he actually had to piss himself.
I believe it. I believe Vince McMahon, when Stone Cold, you know, fake shot him with that gun, that he really pissed himself. So, I mean, why not?
If the boss does it, then you got to do it as well. Isn't that the rule of thumb, Mo?
Pretty much, yeah. But okay, back to Braun Strowman. I think the thing is that usually what it is, it's like when you get a guy like Braun Strowman, and you get him an opponent, say Kane, as a good example, right? And the two of them stand face to face before they've touched, there's a buzz in the crowd, and it's almost always there. And there's a buzz, like, oh my God, look at these two huge guys, we're going to say. And then they fight and it sucks. Big Show being the Big Show carried him. Like Big Show, you know, is an excellent big man, and he had good matches. But as a general rule, like, you know, you get the big guy, you got Big Cass against Big Show. They stand face to face. People tend to take notice. It's, you know, it's two huge dudes. But you know what it's going to ultimately be. It's going to suck. And that's the thing about Braun Strowman is, like, I think it's just that he is limited. He's as good as he can be, and you like him, but you realize he's not complete, and he'll never be complete. And so he's good in a role, but as the top guy carrying the company, it's like, he's not going to give me great matches. Like he'll entertain me. He's fun when he plays the monster and doesn't sell things. But him against Lashley, do I think that's going to be good? It's like, it's not going to be a good match. So you can't get excited about it. And I think that's the big problem.
It's not a marquee matchup where
nothing is with him, because, you know, unless you have somebody that could carry him to the level. And when he's fresh, as soon as you stop being fresh and you're the big guy, and your actual matches, your actual work is limited, you just because of who you are and the style you have. And, you know, it's just, what's his best match? Well, his best matches were against Roman Reigns, and then his next best matches were against Big Show.
Yeah.
And then you look at the roster and you just go, well, you know, are any of these guys going to give him a great match? Like style wise, and that's a big part of it. And also Baron Corbin's never going to give anybody a great match, you know. Yeah. I don't know what his best match is, but maybe against AJ Styles he had like a 3.5-star one. That's AJ Styles.
Yeah. See, and I think that's the other big thing. I think that's what WWE lacks to do is build up marquee matchups that matter and you feel excited. I think the last time WWE put together a match that I was like, ooh, I'm excited to watch this, like this will actually be really good, is when they had AJ versus Finn. And that
I'll disagree. AJ versus Finn, definitely, as soon as it was announced and it was an accident, I was excited.
Yeah.
But no, I was going crazy for the idea of AJ versus Knox. And then they had the matches.
Yep, that's another.
And when they did this, AJ Styles 365, they said, and was it as good as people said? And then they never talked about it, how it wasn't, you know?
Yeah, they kind of glossed over that.
Yeah.
I mean, see, this is the thing. Like, you look at, even look at SmackDown. Brian low-blowed AJ, he mm-hmm. cheated to win.
By the way, I'd like to point out that after the WrestleMania match with Nakamura there, Shinsuke low-blowed him, and it was a post-match beatdown to turn heel. Just like to point that out.
Yeah, that seems to be common thread on this podcast more and more now. And then Brian had a post-match heel turn beatdown on AJ and stomped his head in. And then Brian went on and had, admittedly, a good match against Brock. I got suckered in at the beginning. They got me. And then you got the promo from Brian, which is, this is the new Brian, and Brock beat the weakness out of me, and I'm this new guy, and I'm only worried about me. The Yes Movement's dead. All of you are fickle. And then that's the directive. And AJ basically came out and cut a promo saying, I'm going to kick your ass. Because of what you've done, I'm going to punch you in the face. I'm going to beat you up.
Mm-hmm.
As long as they leave it as that, it's like these two guys are going to beat the hell out of each other, then you have a simple and easy storyline. Not hard.
But they're not. It's like Becky versus Ronda was just booked like that. Because they want, largely because they wanted to save what they thought was the bigger money match. Was, you know, Ronda versus Charlotte. But that's a huge match that should have had a right build. I mean, they haven't got, like, is there any question? Asuka, you talk about you liked Asuka being elevated. She's just there to take the pinfall because they don't want those two to lose right now. That's all it is, you know. But if Asuka had stayed undefeated and beaten Rick or Charlotte, and then Ronda had, like, there's no way Becky or Charlotte, like, Becky or Charlotte at WrestleMania against Ronda would not be as big as it's going to be, and it's going to be big. It would not be as big as if Asuka was undefeated that whole time and faced her. It's just impossible. And they couldn't keep their eye on the ball. Like, that would have been so massive.
Oh, yeah.
So massive.
And the funny thing is, you look at the SmackDown crowd for Tuesday night, and it wasn't the best. And it was kind of a meh crowd. But they were still cheering for Asuka. And it seems that
she's still over.
And after everything she's been through, she's still over. That's got to tell you something.
I'll tell you what I think I said when last time we talked is people no longer cheer for the character and what they do, which is why it's impossible to get a lot of guys getting heat or cheered when the crowd has decided they cheer the guy, the person, because they know it's fake. They know it's written. So everybody knows how good Asuka is. Everybody knows that she should have had a better run. Everybody knows there's no way Carmella should have been beating her. That doesn't, but you don't get somebody over by beating them all the time. Like, that's not the case. It's just that people can see through their bullshit and they want somebody who deserves it to do well.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. And that's the thing where this company, WWE, does a very poor job at giving the guy, giving you what you want versus giving you what you don't want. They will push what you don't want down your throat and beat a dead horse into the ground before they would ever give you someone you wanted until they've cooled off and you'd be like, see, they're not over. So therefore this doesn't work. It was just like, I don't remember who had reported it, but it was reported that Vince was a little meh on the idea of having just a straight wrestling match, AJ versus Nock. And then the match didn't live up to the hype. And he's like, see, didn't work. And I feel like part of that was on the booking of the actual match, the position of the card. Yes.
Position of the card, how long they got to go.
Yeah.
The producer working with them backstage in the match. Like, you know, without anybody doing that, they had a 4¾-star match in the Tokyo Dome. And then,
I feel like they set more things up for failure than they do to succeed. And
dude, how many matches have you ever seen in New Japan that are gimmick matches in the time you've been watching? And you talk about how great it is and how great the matches are. How many gimmick matches have you ever seen?
I've seen the ladder match.
Ladder match
with Omega and Elgin.
Which was awesome.
Yeah. I'm trying to think here.
Cody, I guess they have a lot of plunder matches because the rules are pretty relaxed, kind of like not quite at ECW levels, but not far off.
Yeah.
But like as actual gimmick matches, like a last man standing or first blood. Yeah, like two.
Three, right? The 2 out of 3 falls match.
The 2 out of 3 falls match counts and the triple threat for the title. I mean, triple threats are common on the junior division or in the tag divisions, but triple threat singles match for the IWGP heavyweight title is a gimmick match. You never see that.
Yeah.
You never see that. So this is, you could entertain people and have it without having to do the gimmicks. But again, Vince McMahon, though, is not in touch with the current WWE audience. And War Games is okay because you know what, NXT doesn't do something like that all the time. In fact, most times when they might do one gimmick match per takeover, maybe, and sometimes they won't even do one.
Yeah, sometimes it's just straight wrestling match. I mean, War Games, we had 2 gimmick matches. We had the 2 out of 3 falls, and then we had the War Games match.
And 2 out of 3 falls pretty loose as a gimmick match, especially since originally that's how wrestling matches were. It was changed to one fall after.
So oh, really? I didn't know that.
Wrestling matches were originally all 2 out of 3 falls, yes.
Ooh.
Yeah. That's the original. So if anything else,
That'd be interesting. I'm just thinking about some of the greatest matches of all time. If they had kept it, the 2 out of 3 falls, how that would change the complexity of the matches.
But I wanted to ask you because the we talked about the average age of the products or of the viewer. We've talked about that in the past. So it's much older than people realize. And certainly that's, you don't get them by doing this Drake Maverick stuff, you know.
No.
You're younger. You're that millennial. You're who they want to attract or should want to attract. What does WWE need to do to reach millennials? Because just being on social media and Twitter clearly isn't enough, though they think it is. Just being on YouTube is not enough. What makes something attractive? What makes something appealing to the millennial? What is the mindset of them that they need to reach to find to reach the millennial? Just like they were able to find the mindset in the Attitude Era, it wasn't really the greatest product, but it was the right mindset for the Gen X or Gen Y kind of crowd at the time.
Yeah.
So what is it they need to do?
For me, the one reason I got into New Japan was I heard about it and I heard about the athleticism. And I think for me, like, that's one of the reasons why NXT is so much revered and why I very much enjoy is it doesn't insult my intelligence. It focuses on the athletes. These people still have characters and they still build upon those characters, but they let them actually be athletes. And I think that's the biggest thing. And that's why I think if you were to reset WWE and reset it all and focus more on athletes, I think you athletic feats and athletic abilities.
Like for you, what about though for other people around? What do you think, get a sense of people around your age, what it is you need to do to reach them?
I'm not sure, because I hear a few different things. I hear athleticism is a big thing for young people. They like to see athletes. They like to see those quick little gifs or highlights of Seth Rollins doing the Falcon Arrow or Aleister Black doing the jumping knee on Johnny Gargano. Having those simple little gifs within a match is really, really big. Like, I mean, you look at the buzz that Ricochet and Ospreay got. But the other thing I hear, and it's a little, is a lot of people my age want to see the Attitude Era stuff come back. Like my age grew up on the Attitude Era and they want that type of stuff back. But I just don't know if that works for mainstream audience these days. I don't think the Attitude Era would work. But that's the two predominant things that I hear from my age is Attitude Era and athleticism.
You know, but I even mean deeper, like athleticism, most certainly. I mean, but even like when you say the Attitude Era, that's nostalgia. I don't think they'd like it necessarily as much. I mean, the Drake Maverick stuff is closer to Attitude Era stuff than anything we've seen in a while. And it sucks, right?
Yeah.
I think what I'm not talking about is those fans that you're necessarily referencing that you hear from. I'm talking about the ones that you don't hear. Like, I'm talking about the guys, the casual ones that don't watch. The people of that generation, what do they do? What do they see? What entertains those people? The millennials, what do they find intriguing? What do they get into? Is social justice warriors, if that's a thing, then is that a thing that's all millennials, or is that just a small portion? And so we think it's bigger than it is. Like, what is it that would get the people that didn't watch Attitude Era and that didn't to make the, what connects to them millennial? What connects to the people your age? Do you connect to the people your age?
I don't know. I don't think I do. I feel like people seem to, one of the things that millennials seem to like is drama, if that's anything. Like, there was Trinity had done a whole YouTube series on the fall of Jake Paul, and he was a YouTuber, and it was all about this documentary breaking down his actions and just everything that happened, and it had millions of views at the start, and then it kind of dragged on too long and people lost the attention span of its audience, and it's the numbers dwindled. I think there was at one point there was a video that had 13 million views. So I'm using this as an example. Mm-hmm. I think people were interested in, because it was a YouTube star, it was a young guy and it was living this lavish, expensive lifestyle, but he was doing crazy things. So to me, I think that's what millennials like, is the YouTubers. I think that's one of the more popular medians right now. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how that translates to WWE, but that, like, that is a good point where they were able to capitalize on what happened within the Attitude Era. Was they were at that right time with everything that was kind of happening within that era, and they were able to adapt to
sink in. But this is also why, I mean, it definitely is. I mean, they captured, just like they did with the Rock and Wrestling Era earlier, they captured something that was that spoke and was right for that, you know, time and place. They will not grow this product or get hot again, going back to somebody else's, if going back to your daddy's wrestling or to your grandfather's wrestling, you know. They it can't be the Attitude Era, the Rock and Wrestling Era, or anything else. It has to be something new for the new people if you want to attract new viewers. And this is the biggest thing that they have. They're not attracting new viewers. If you talk about the show that they did on Raw, on this, you know, previous Raw, they had the fourth lowest in modern history against a very low rated Monday night game. The fourth lowest in Raw in history, and the second most people to ever leave on the third or in the last hour of the show. People were turned off, especially women were turned off, and I'm sure the Drake Maverick thing doesn't help. You know, it's how many people of the 2.36 million people that watched, and almost as many people watched SmackDown this week, of those 2.36 or whatever, how many of those are like, I loved it? 200,000? Or like, I loved it, I can't wait to watch that exact same show again next week. Do you think it's 200,000? Do you think it's 10%?
I think it's way less. I think people are rejected. I think the biggest thing that they do right now is that show felt like a rehash of shows I've seen over and over and over and over and over and over again. It feels like something that you'd see in the Ruthless Aggression Era. It's something you would see in the Attitude Era. It's something you would see 5 years ago. It's something you'd see 6 weeks ago.
Yeah, they're definitely stale.
They've hit a wall, and I looked up the documentary series on this Jake Paul. The first thing did 22 million on YouTube, and that's the only spot it's on. The second episode did 21 million. So then the rest are in the 10 millions range, ranging from 14 million to 17, 18 million. So this is just a YouTube series. So to me, that tells me something about what the mindset of the millennial and the younger viewer that drew them in. And these videos were on average about 30 minutes to an hour in length.
WWE would kill to have these numbers.
Oh yeah, they would
kill to have these numbers.
And the thing is, so it makes you think they've got to, that I think that's the biggest thing that WWE has to do, is find a way to capture what is working. And I hate to say it, but they have to get, their creative has to get a lot younger. They can't rely on the P.S. Hayes's, the Vince McMahon's.
Absolutely.
Because it's just not working. Because
and there is an attitude that the millennials are, there's a lot of blowback against millennials, you know, more so I think than many generations. There's a lot of blowback against them. But the fact is that you're absolutely right. They need to get younger to do that, because if they had, if say 200,000 people loved it, and then you have 2.2 million people left who didn't like it, who you need to try and attract again the next week. And I'm looking at that and going, well, some of them are going to leave because they hated it. Some of them will just leave. And every week you're doing that to yourself when you put on a show like that. Some of them will leave. And most of the ones that come back, if that's 2 million people or 2.1 million, they're coming back out of habit. And someday it happens when it's, you know, someone like me, and I broke that habit and I don't miss it at all. And again, if you lose me, nobody's a harder hardcore wrestling fan, and you can't have me. Something wrong with your product. And I'm not even who you need to. Like you say, the younger people, the creative. I love that. They're creative. They need to get rid of PSAs. But again, do you want to be a wrestling product or a television product? Because if you want to be a wrestling product, PSAs knows how to put on a wrestling product. Michael Bailey. Yeah. You know? But if it's a television product, then you do need to get younger.
Yeah. I guess my question to you is, what do you think about the a couple years ago, what do you think about the Ricochet and Ospreay match from Japan that caught so much attention?
We talked about it at the time. I said this is great because this is the wrestling for the reason it was at the time and it was great is because it is that wrestling that is somebody that Jim Cornette doesn't understand and doesn't think is that good. And that's fine. That's a good thing. That's the thing about the Young Bucks, right? Young Bucks are who likes the Young Bucks? Well, I mean, someone like me might, but more importantly, they do appeal to the millennials.
Yeah.
They do it. They do the stuff that traditional wrestlers say you can't do that, though they've gotten a lot better at selling and this and that. But they do stuff that people, you know, complain about. And I'm not saying that, you know, there isn't a point to some of the things that the older crowd says, but the idea is that wrestling needs to be for the next generation, needs to be theirs. It needs to be what the Attitude Era was for those people, and the rock and wrestling was. The previous generations thought it sucked, but it didn't matter because it was for that generation.
Yeah,
and they need to find if WWE doesn't, and this is what the Elite has. And New Japan has really found, and ROH has found to a degree, though they're struggling a little bit with it. But it's that finding it for the next generation, that's okay. That's enough people to make money off of.
Yeah. Because, like, I don't expect – I think there's a mindset out there that expects you to be able to strike big right away and everything to be hunky-dory and think – and I just don't think that would work. I think that when you go through a transition of one era to the next, I think there's going to be growing pains. You have to accept it from the rock and roll era of wrestling to Bret and Shawn's era, which bled into the Attitude Era, which was the next big boom, and then the lull, and then now you're moving from the Attitude Era to this current generation.
But they're still presenting what they were presenting 15 years ago.
Yeah, and that's their biggest issue is they are stuck. They are stuck, and I mean financially they're the healthiest they've ever been. But that's because according to the numbers they are. But my thing is with that is yes you are now, but what about a year from now? What about 2 years from now?
Yeah, it doesn't matter if you are 1 year from now or 5 years from now. To me, it's are you 10 years from now when this current deal is over? And when you say that they are financially, you know, they're sitting there and they're trying to open up, trying to spread NXT all over the world, open up all these mini territories so they can kill all these small territories. That costs a lot of money. Then a lot of these are going to lose money. NXT UK is showing that they didn't draw nearly as well. Number one, when they went overseas on the WWE tour, they didn't draw nearly as well. And then they didn't draw nearly as well for NXT UK as well. And it's hilarious. Cause then you get, I remember watching the NXT UK and it's, I can't remember the announcer. Wouldn't remember the Victor Joseph or whatever the hell it is. He's like, you know, Triple H talks about how he wants these guys, even if they never make it to WWE, to be able to make a living wrestling. I'm like, no, you asshole, they can. They are. He talks about it, but everybody thinks unless you can do it in WWE or it's WWE branded, you can't. Guys are doing that already. They're making a good living outside of WWE. And he wants to make it so that's possible. No, they want to kill it so that nobody else can, so they still have to do it through them. So it can only be possible through them, even if they don't make it to the main roster. And it sounds, so it sounds noble, but it's actually pretty evil. Yeah. They want to kill what all these people are doing to make money so that they can only make money through them at a smaller level.
Yeah, no, and that's, I mean, that was one of the big stories this week, were the NXT UK contracts and the exclusivity of certain contracts and the tier levels it sounds like they're broken into. There's one where they don't care what you do. The other one is, well, you can't wrestle guys from promotions we see as rivals. And the third one is, you're exclusive to NXT UK.
Mm-hmm.
And now only one of those had a pay bump, and that was the exclusive one. So it's you're putting yourself in a position where either you have to rely solely on WWE or you don't go to WWE at all. And I think hopefully it gets to the point where you don't have to go to WWE, because I feel like that the company,
we said it before, they're making a lot of money. They're spending money doing this. They're going to lose money doing this, and they're not going to have nearly as much money as people think, because they're going to everything. Not only is their main roster stuff going to go down, but all the stuff that they're doing to expand is going to be extremely expensive, and I don't think it's going to work.
Yeah.
Because what's happening is, it comes back to why did ROH and New Japan sell out Madison Square Gardens, or New Japan have this great crowd when they first came over? Why did All In sell out? Why? Well, it's not so much, it's maybe not even, I don't even think it's 50% how good that the Being the Elite show is and how good the wrestling is from New Japan. So much of it is people angry with WWE, and even if they're still watching it, they're angry with it and they want something else, and it's like a middle finger to the WWE. And WWE trying to kill all these small promotions that people like is only going to continue to create the wrestling fans don't like WWE. Even the fans that watch it don't like the company anymore. The Saudi Arabia thing and all this stuff. Like, there's a lot of dislike for who these people are and their product. Yeah. But it feels like it's habit, and it feels like the only real big game in town. And yeah, I think they're just gonna they continue to make mistakes, and they cannot afford to continue to make the audience angry with them. I'll give you an example. TNA. TNA had, I mean, TNA, people don't realize it now. TNA was up to like 1.8 million at one point. I mean, SmackDown and Raw now are doing like 2.2, 2.4. I mean, we're talking like shouting distance of them at one point. And then they got down to the 1.6, 1.2, 1.4. And even that is really pretty good. Now they're doing like 150,000, 200,000 viewers, if that, you know? Yeah. And a lot of it started like it was continually rehiring Russo, and it made the fans dislike you. And they went into this big battle, and this was the nail in their coffin to me. They haven't been able to recover from this, even though they're not the same company anymore, even though they have different owners and different creative. When they did the Jeff or the Matt Hardy thing and they fought him on that, they lost a battle for, I don't know, it was like not a marketing battle. What's the word I'm looking for?
Trademark?
Not a trademark battle. No. The court of public opinion is what the word I'm looking for.
So
they lost in the court. Yeah, they lost in the court of public opinion. And they garnered such dislike towards the company that was already building, to the point that now even if people say it's great, they won't try it again. You get to that certain point where it's the tipping point. People are just so angry with you. And that's what TNA did. Like, I was like, TNA should just let them have it, even if it's not worth it, even if it's a bad, like, this, from a pure business thing, from a PR battle thing, they couldn't afford to lose it. It was going to kill them, I said at the time on We Talk Wrestling. And I really think it's one of the biggest things that kept them from ever being able to recover, is that court of public opinion, where it was just like, you know, you won't give us what you want. You're not these guys, you know. Matt Hardy deserves to have it. I don't care if he doesn't have the legal rights to it, or he does or he doesn't. Just give it to him. And they just couldn't afford that battle anymore. Well, WWE is going to get to that, where I think if they try and kill all these independents and try and expand like this and into the UK and try and kill PWG and all this shit that they're trying to do, I really think that that's just going to – it's like, again, I said this about I'm sorry I'm going off for so long. I hope it's not too boring. But I said this about the – because I'm going to keep going, obviously. No, but I said this about if Cody and maybe I didn't say it on the show, or maybe it was just in conversation I have with somebody. I'm like, but if Cody goes and the Bucks go and Omega goes, everyone's like, well, it's just going to kill ROH and New Japan. And I was like, no, it's going to make them more popular. It was, at first, these guys, the people would be excited when they're in there, and it was the same with AJ Styles. But eventually, people are going to go, wait a second, what you're trying to do to New Japan? Well, screw you. I'm going to support New Japan for that. Like, if you try and take away something that people like, or you try and these predatory business tactics that Vince McMahon used himself to garner the court of public opinion against Ted Turner, even though it was bullshit, that he used himself. And even though he did it himself in the 80s, there wasn't an internet and people weren't aware how he did it. And then he made it sound like somebody else was doing it to him, which was why it was bullshit. And they weren't even doing it as badly as he did to these territories in the 80s. The Ted Turner's actions were nowhere near as bad. And now he's doing it again. Now that there is no Ted Turner, he's going to lose this, man. And they can't afford to more than they realize. Make any sense?
No, and that absolutely makes sense. That the battle for the future of pro wrestling, it appears, like you said, we got a small glimpse of it with the Matt Hardy and the TNA debacle. I mean, I don't disagree with you. That's logical, sound point that this battle is going to come down to court of public opinion. And WWE was on John Oliver, not for any of the good reasons. Yeah. I mean, and you think about how many people John Oliver and HBO reach and how that impacts their view. And then you start to hear more and more stories and you get to see the backlash for what they're doing. This is why I think, and this was one of the other things I was going to bring up on the show, was Cody's comments. Did you happen to see what Cody said in Melbourne, Australia?
No. I know a lot of the comments he's been making lately, but not that one. What did he say?
He had said that he was at a Q&A. One of the things said to him was asked about this promotion, this All Elite Wrestling. And he more or less said that you have to wait until January. Announcement will be made then, officially, on all of this. But it will be bigger than what people think.
Yeah. And
that, to me...
because they have goodwill, it will be.
Oh, they've got a ton of goodwill. They seem to be the...
Again, instead of trying to sign everybody and kill all the small promotions that way, you know the best way that WWE could kill All Elite and New Japan was by putting on an excellent product.
Yep.
That is the single best thing. And if they put on a shit product, it doesn't matter how many people they sign or this and that. All it's going to do is make people angrier with them and make the people find those other things more and more and more.
Yeah.
Like I say, they could have signed, I really believe they could have signed Omega, the Bucks, and Hangman Page and all of the Elite. And it wouldn't have, not only would it not have killed the independents, it would have made them stronger. I really believe that within a year it would have, because I really believe that it would have made people angry at them again. And eventually they would have just gone and found something else.
Yeah. I mean, you look at, like, I go back to that YouTube series. The YouTube views started to dip towards the end because it dragged on too long. But I guarantee you all the viewers that guy lost were going on to watch other things.
Yes.
And found things that entertained them, and they moved on. And that is the one thing that people do, is when they don't like something, they move on. And it's really simple. Humans have been doing it forever.
Exactly.
So
I moved on to New Japan and these other things from the main roster and NXT. Like, I moved on. I always will. Like, everybody always will. Yeah. You know, I watched Walking Dead for years. I stopped watching it this year. I've started watching a couple new series.
Yeah. You know? Oh yeah, no. It's just like Dexter. When it got down to the final couple seasons, it was like, I am out of here. I stopped watching The Walking Dead shortly after Negan had come in. I was like, I don't know what it was, but I had zero interest in it. Like, I'd lost all interest. I was really hyped about Negan. And then all the interest disappeared, and then I go and watch other things. I mean, it's, and WWE has a whole new thing to combat, and that's streaming services. Everything's yep. at people's fingertips now. Like, I could go, I could fire on my Apple TV, I could fire up Crave in Canada, I could fire up Netflix, and I could fire up Amazon Prime.
We got more than that. I mean, I got ROH I can stream on still. I got CBS All Access. I got, yeah, Amazon Prime. Did you mention that one?
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. I got a bunch of stuff, though.
Yeah. And I mean, you, there's video game consoles. There is YouTube. There is so many different things that now.
Shudder. Shudder's another one I have a membership for. I love horror movies. Shudder. There's another one I'll watch over WWE.
I'm easily frightened, so.
I know. I know. You think looking at that face every day, you get used to being scared.
No.
And I was talking about, you know, you're young, you're in that millennial range, and then I was thinking about how much you look like 80s actor, your dead ringer for C. Thomas Howell. Has anybody ever told you this before?
No.
Dude, look up C. Thomas Howell. I mean, it's frightening. If anybody's not sure what you look like on who listens to the show, they should look up this guy. Kind of solve it.
C. Thomas Howell. Oh, jeez. That's not a bright future.
Oh, that's the future. Well, yeah, no, that's not a bright future. But it's probably the future you're going to. And definitely, if you look at some of the shots of the past, man, you're like, I was watching a movie with him the other day. I was like, geez, I can't think it was you.
Oh boy,
you see it in him?
Oh yeah, I can absolutely see it. I'll agree with that.
You're a dead ringer for that guy, man. When he was younger, so now you know what you look like. You know, so I'm sorry about that. Could be worse. Could be stuck with my face.
Yeah, no, I don't know what you look like, Mo. So I'm going to think about that. Maybe I'll come up with some by the end of this
podcast. I don't really look like anybody. I tell you, I look like my grandfather. So, I mean, there's nobody famous.
But there we go. No one will truly know what you look like. They'll only know you by your voice.
Face made for radio, as the old joke goes.
Oh, man. Wrestling. I completely agree with you what you said, Mo. Like, this, when it comes down to it, and the more and more negative things you hear, and the more and more you hear people messaging, like retweeting the Elite and saying, please don't go to WWE, there would be a point where people would be like, please go to WWE so I can see you. Now it's like, don't go to WWE.
Yeah. Or we talked about it, and then afterwards we found out it was confirmed, the idea of TakeOver outdrawing Survivor Series. TakeOver with its no real stars, so to speak, just independent hardcores, outdrawing, having more views than NX, you know, than Survivor Series with, you know, your major stars, your Ronda Rouseys and this and that. Same thing, we sit there and go, please don't ever send Ricochet up to the main roster. We're begging you not to send him to the main roster. Well, that's not a good thing.
No.
All of this is the same thing. And I realized WWE is getting my money when I'm watching the network, and I was pretty close to getting rid of it. And ultimately, it comes down to, you know, I'm just still, I don't know, man.
It's that still, habit.
Well, that's not a habit. I really like NXT.
Yeah.
And do I, you know, and then it became sure, I dislike WWE, but hell, I mean, it's a lot like, is Nike a completely, you know, ethical company? Is Walmart, if I'm going to buy shoes there, or is Amazon? Hell, Amazon isn't. No. So it's a really difficult, you know, conundrum.
Yeah.
How do you live in a bubble? But, I don't think that this was the conversation anybody was necessarily expecting on the show, or that we thought we'd be having, but, you know, kind of just one thing.
It's one of the nice things, because wrestling is in such a state right now that it's probably the most interesting it's ever been, for me at least. This is the most, I feel like the curtain's pulled back and there's so many different parts moving and there's so many other different spots that guys can go. And now with a network on demand, it's kind of the perfect storm of what's going to happen next. I mean, I think it really kicked off when WWE raided New Japan. I think that's when it really kicked off. And then the year that New Japan had shortly after that. And then now here we're sitting where...
More people knew about WWE, New Japan, not from WWE talking about them on their show. more people knew about it because, hey, this guy's coming to WWE. Oh, I know the WWE. Where's he from? Why does everybody love him? The Google searches that came from AJ and these guys and Shinsuke. Oh, he's in NXT. Who's where is he? Where is he from? What's, you know, this actually was, it was actually good for them. It's amazing.
Oh yeah,
it was good.
They got tremendous exposure, and I mean, this is built several guys.
And they have a superior product.
Yeah, and you get drawn in. You get drawn into Okada. You get drawn into Omega. You get drawn into the Bucks. You get drawn into Tanahashi, Zack Sabre Jr., Suzuki.
And WWE counters with an hour of Baron Corbin.
A guy
who in a tag team could be, as a big guy comes in and hits a couple hot moves, could be just fine. But yeah, a guy who, you know, yeah.
He's got a nice move base to do for the hot tag. That's actually a really good point.
Yeah. His run. Everybody can have a role.
Yeah.
But just using people like, you know, because it wasn't until this Monday I read those results. I'm like, holy shit. I never realized it because he's been this character, this GM for a while. And I thought it was stupid and blah, blah, blah. And then he was, you know, not really winning matches, doing it necessarily. And, you know, his Ronda Rousey's threatening to beat him up and he's backing down. And I'm like, oh, man, they've just drinking this guy who's a former NFL offensive lineman, which is impressive. You know, even though he wasn't a regular starter. I mean, he was just kind of practice, but even getting to that level, impressive. And I'm just like, they've just made him such a pussy and such an. And then I'm like, no, I read this and I'm like, holy shit, he's getting a huge push.
Yeah.
He's getting a massive push. And it caught me under, you know, I didn't even realize it. And it's like, wow, that doesn't make me want to watch.
Do you, now, just out of curiosity, because I'm more curious, do you think this was a spot that was earmarked for Jason Jordan before he got hurt?
I don't know. I think, you know, they've been high on Baron Corbin for a long time.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Let's just play the what if game, because I always like playing that in wrestling, because that's always fun. What if this was Jason Jordan? How do you think he would have done in this role?
I think the way that they booked their number one, I think he's a better talker. He's not the best, better than Corbin. He's a better wrestler than Corbin by a ton. Probably would have done. Yeah, I mean, it would have been good. Don't you think it would have been good?
Yeah.
Not great, but I mean, also just the way they do their characters and the heel GM kind of being usually a chicken shit guy.
Yeah.
He would have been that would have suited him better than it suits Baron Corbin, big tatted up former offensive lineman.
You could have run an angle where it was Jordan that led to Kurt getting decimated by McIntyre. So that could have been another little thread to this. Because I feel like we've all forgotten about it, but you could easily build to Kurt doing a babyface rundown to the ring to make a save on Elias and Finn. And you could.
It's too bad that they just completely destroyed him.
You know what? I didn't mind what they did with Drew and Kurt. Because I wish they'd done more with Drew. That's the only thing with it is I didn't mind it at the time, but it just didn't seem to go anywhere for Drew. Like it was like, oh, I murdered Kurt Angle. I'm not in the title contention or anything. I'm just here kind of wreaking havoc.
Well, their follow up on almost everything is awful.
And that was the one thing I heard Sean say after a big match is what matters after the most important thing after a big match is the follow up. And even it might even be more important than the quality of the match is the follow up. Where do you go next? And the one thing with NXT, they follow things up. They have a logical flow. Like
New Japan, how many times have you seen something that from a long time ago that happens that they call back on much, much later?
Yep. And
you know, you trust them to follow up, and that's a big part of being a wrestling fan is trusting the company and the booker. They're gonna. So I mean, when it's like, okay, Daniel Bryan turned heel, and you're like, you should watch it. I'm like, dude, I'm not going to. And you're like, I remember, and I'm like, and Addy said the same thing. He's like, it was a pretty great moment. you know, the heel turn. I'm like, yeah, but they'll fuck it up. So yeah. I don't want to invest my time or energy just to be disappointed because it's happened so many times. On the other hand, every time that New Japan does something, I go, okay, I can't wait to see where this goes, even if it takes a year, because yeah. I know I trust them. And that's a big part of wanting to invest in wrestling.
Yeah. Like, I mean, we've both seen the recent NXT TV, and they had Lars beat Keith Lee. And yeah. I guarantee you there'll be a follow-up to where Lars is going to go next and where Keith Lee is going to go.
Dude, next. Have you heard about this Lars Sullivan message board stuff?
Yeah, I've seen a bit of it, and I'm like...
Oh, man, as soon as I saw... I didn't know about this until a couple days ago, and I'm just disgusted by this guy. Like, misogynistic, racist, just all-around evil, just terrible stuff. If you're being banned from a bodybuilder's message board, it's got to be bad. And, one guy said he's thinking about committing suicide, and he said, basically paraphrasing it, but he said, don't just take out yourself, make sure you take out some women too. You know, like, I'm like, and I know it's 10 years ago and he was younger or whatever, but no.
Yeah.
I it's another one of those things that makes me just go, no, I'm done with you, WWE. But here I am watching NXT.
Yeah.
But now, but he's going to the main roster, and it's like, but he shouldn't be. Like, but we know that there's no
punishment.
One thing if he even addressed it, nothing. Like, so I'm not so sure he doesn't feel this way too now still, but he at least, and he talked about how he got with Ronda Rousey when she was still a barmaid and all this stuff. Like, I don't know. He's pretty disgusting as a real person. And again,
yeah,
a real person counts, isn't it?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I mean, you look at, I wasn't going to bring it up, but I figure since we're down this rabbit hole, we can mention it. Have you been up to date on the James Ellsworth situation?
Yeah. Yeah. Not probably. I mean, I've heard about it, and that's all I need to hear. Like, yeah. One, you know, knowing that he sent, you know, naked selfies to a underage kid. That's enough. Like, I don't need any more.
The latest rumor, and this is a rumor, so whether this is 100% concrete or not, but I find it a little bit more believable. It sounds like he was desperately trying to get someone to break into this kid's home, steal the phone, and destroy it so that could get rid of all evidence.
Well, that sounds like the type of thing that, yeah, sounds like the type that seems very plausible, unfortunately.
Yeah. See, and that's the thing. And that's,
do you know who Mel Phillips is?
Yeah, I've heard of him. I've read about him in Brett's book, and then I've read a few other things on him. There's some real.
What I'm saying is, this shit's not new in wrestling, and being covering it up or feeling that it's okay, and you know Snuka, let's put it this way, even Snuka and Nancy Argentina, all this stuff is not. It's not. I think there's a lot more good people in the company in wrestling now. Like, I think the boys, they really are better people for the main part than a lot of guys in the past. There was a lot of real scumbags in wrestling, but the company itself and their willingness and their is still really rough.
Yeah. Their lack of follow through with certain situations like that, they could absolutely continue to clean things up and get rid of very poor attitudes. But I feel like they're almost afraid that if they clean up some of the bad stuff, that means they're going to be getting rid of a few people that they like.
Oh, absolutely. Randy Orton wouldn't be with the company if they cleaned up the bad shit, right?
I mean, you don't want a handshake from Randy Orton. And it's very apparent. And I think... Man, you talk about Mania matches and everything. Randy's probably going to be in a marquee matchup for Mania. Nothing came from everything that came out about Randy. I mean, there's been stuff about Randy for years.
Years, dude, years.
He seemed like someone you would not want to hang around at all. And yeah, it's you look at wrestling, and this is why I like
WWE gets to eat its cake, or gets to have its cake and eat it too. If yeah. you can't have your cake and eat it too, they get to. So far, yeah. But I'm telling you, you can't. No, that there is a tipping point where it's not gonna. It's gonna all come. It takes years. It's gonna, especially with a company this big, and it's gonna. But it's gonna happen.
Yeah, I mean the other thing I want to talk to you about was more and more about this All Elite wrestling, and there was a rumor floating around that JR was talking to people within WWE that contracts would be up around a certain time, going, are you thinking of re-signing with WWE? What does your future kind of look like? And kind of starting to send out little feelers for this All Elite Wrestling. A couple questions I had for you on All Elite Wrestling. One of them is, how important is it to have, can they do the show with the Elite and a couple lower guys on the independents? What do you think they have to do to successfully build a flourishing brand? Not take on Vince right off hop, but what do you think they have to do in the first year of their existence?
We talked about this some in the last show. The biggest thing they have to do, and we talk about this some on this show actually as well, the biggest thing they have to do is not present wrestling in the way it's been presented for years. They have to not present wrestling in the way that WWE and TNA and even ROH presented, or New Japan. It has to be using these other, reaching out to these other people, these people through different mediums and different ways than not just having an Instagram page, but understanding how to use that Instagram page to engage people. This is what it's all about. This is what they have to do. And I think they can. I mean, we've seen this with their YouTube, you know? I absolutely think they can. But this is the biggest thing for building the brand, is to not say, oh, okay, this is the way wrestling has always been done. You have to have TV and you have to do this and that. And yet it's like, no. Just because this is the way it's always been done doesn't mean anything. How should it be done in the future in this new world? And the person that figures that out, and these guys seem to have a good head on their shoulders for that, that's the company that will make the biggest splash. Does that make sense?
No, that absolutely makes sense. I don't quite know what that answer is to what they could do to click within this generation. I've been thinking about,
we talked about it a little bit last week. We talked about how if every wrestler was able to generate a certain fan base doing this is the Elite type shows, then you don't need a television show, and that some you'll get some crossover, but you get some different ones. If everybody builds their own brand, separate brand, separately, and owns it, but also within that you get an overall company and booking and storylines and feel, but everybody builds their own brands. Everybody, if they have a bunch of Zack Riders and embrace it, that, for instance, is something new.
Yeah. You don't need to have all these big, massive stars.
No. You can't just have the Elite and a few independents. Well, number one, I don't think they would have just the Elite and a few independents. But number two, it depends on how good those independents are, right?
Yeah.
Walter just recently signed with NXT UK, and he's going to essentially be the we talk about how they're not doing well, you know, and not nearly as well as they expected. And honestly, I watched the show and I think like half that roster is not good enough to even be on NXT TV. Like it's not as good as I expected. You know, you hope it grows, but this guy, so they signed this guy to essentially be the linchpin of, and I'm like, yeah, but what kind of draw is he?
Yeah.
What makes Walter a draw to anybody? And how much of a draw can he be? And I don't know. Like, I really have no idea. Like, you know, should you be anybody be excited? It's Walter. It's just one of those good, solid hands. But one guy like that's not going to make a difference. But if it's a bunch of guys kind of his level who are talented, who you get to use right, you get to do hide their weaknesses and accentuate the positives, then I bet you there's a lot of guys out there who are really good we don't know about. Who heard of Marco Stunt a year ago? Who heard of, a bunch of these guys, like, you know, recently even. So, yeah, I think they can succeed. But again, it's not so much about the actual it's only partially about the product. It's also partially about making people feel like they're fighting back against the establishment.
Yeah.
And Paul Heyman tried to do this with ECW, but in a profane, violent, misogynistic way that had a ceiling. And these guys, I think, are smart enough to know better.
Yeah. And I think doing it, having that fight against the establishment, and not only that, but having it be where, like you said, being like Paul Heyman, where you accentuate those strengths. I think there's probably a handful of guys out there, and a lot of people were talking that WWE will kill the independents, and everything that they're doing is going to kill the independents. I don't think they could ever fully kill the independents. You can tell me if I'm wrong. I think the independents will always replenish itself, because there'll always be new wrestling graduates. And there'll always be guys that don't want to go to WWE right away and that can find their foothold elsewhere. And if there are other alternatives for them to go to, they will go there, and then they will eventually build themselves up and either eventually sign with WWE, which is totally within their right to do, or go and do their own thing. So I don't think that...
Sorry, no, go ahead. Finish your thought.
I don't think WWE can ever fully kill the independents. I think that the independents will always find a way, because if the independents die, then I feel like that's the sign that pro wrestling's dying, because then it means people aren't going to local shows anymore. It means that there's not as many people interested in being a professional wrestler. And it means that eventually the well dries up, and you don't have young talent to pick from anymore for these bigger promotions like a New Japan, a WWE, a Progress, a Ring of Honor. You no longer have spots to take from. So that would be a very bad sign for wrestling as a whole. And I just can't foresee WWE monopolizing every inch of wrestling. I just can't, because
they
as you said,
but it's gonna fail.
Yeah, and that's exactly it. They want to do this NXT Germany. I'm like, if I was in Hunter's spot and I wanted to have these NXTs, I would slowly build up NXT UK as a traveling brand, and I work on it and I build that up before I even thought. And I would travel to Germany. I would travel to all across the UK and Europe and build it up there. I would not dare put an NXT in Japan. I think that's a foolish choice.
Back to what I said before, when you have money, you think that you think you're invulnerable and you spend money. And that to me is one of those things that and then you turn around and you don't have as much money as you thought you did.
Yeah.
You know, like a person who gets a raise who actually ends up in more in debt.
Yeah.
And this is what I see. This is going to New Japan. That's just like, well, we can. And it's like, well, it's going to fail and you're going to lose a lot of money. Yeah. And you know.
And yeah. I mean, the thing is, like, if I were them, I'd be like, okay, we have more money. Let's still be smart with it.
WWE isn't going to do this now that they have these big money deals with Fox and USA and Usabis and all this stuff. Like, they're just going to spend that money, man, trying to do all this other stuff. And I don't know how many times I've thought to myself over the last many years, oh, that's it. They've lost this guy. They've lost. And then I stopped thinking it, you know. But for a long time, it was like, wow, they lost this guy. They lost this guy. They lost this guy. ROH is going to go out of business. And then they didn't. They would always replenish them and were just as good, you know. And we're in a different age. The last guys who left WWE or left ROH for WWE willingly for the opportunity, thinking it was the end game, was really probably Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens. Now, sure, you've had Kyle O'Reilly and Adam Cole and these guys leave since, but I feel like that if they feel like if it don't make it, that you know, I don't know, it's the right business move. It's not like, oh, I got to get to WWE.
Yeah.
Like more like it's the right business move right now. And if they had something like, you know, All Elite Wrestling, then maybe they wouldn't have made it. Whereas, yeah, I kind of feel like nowadays, WWE hasn't over the last couple of years suddenly been able to get everybody they want. In the past, they always could. And I think Sami Zayn, Kevin Owens, how many years ago was that? About 4 years ago, those guys left. That was kind of the last, about 4 or 5 years ago, I think that was the last time we saw them willing, like them being able to get whoever they wanted. And now you've seen it. You couldn't get Ibushi, couldn't get Zack Sabre Jr., can't get Cody. Can't, like, there's all this stuff. Like, it's not necessarily the same.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a sign. And you look at it all. Man, I hope All Elite Wrestling succeeds. I hope that this is real. And I hope that in around this time next year, we're talking about the growth that it's seeing. And not that it's marginal, massive growth, and it's crazy how quickly they're growing, but nice, steady growth for a business that could become potentially an alternative to WWE. Do you think that there's any wrestling promotion out there that could reach the level and compete with WWE? Any wrestling promotion?
Okay, yeah, I'll tell you straight up, and this is my initial answer. This is where I thought, and yeah, no, I'm going to go with this. Okay. No, okay. I don't think any wrestling company can compete with who WWE is today. I don't think any wrestling company is going to reach what WWE is today. I don't believe that. I do believe they'll be able to compete with what WWE is going to become in the future as their business continues to shrink. And that's the key. It's not about will somebody be as big as WCW was? No. But if WWE, let's look at it this way. In the 70s, I mean, WWE, as much as they like to say, oh, you know, people taken out of took it out of smoky bingo halls, and Stephanie actually believes that because she's an idiot, but, you know, and saved it, blah, blah, blah. No. And if you look at the 70s and you'd see territories in Memphis where they would have 40% of the people watching, and, you know, Portland would have a strong thing, and, you know, there'd be, you know, Independence, Florida would have massive television ratings and draw 8,000 people every week, and, you know, 10,000 people in Memphis and this and that. And you added it all up and it was like 10 million people watching wrestling. And then WWE came in and it fell. And even during the Rock and Wrestling, you had one bigger company and one bigger star. Nobody was nationally a star. You know, Jerry Lawler wasn't nationally a star at the level of Hulk Hogan, but he was as big a star in Memphis as Hulk Hogan was nationally. It's just that it was different. You had a bunch of Jerry Lawlers, okay? So now you had the less people watching, but a bigger company, so it seemed like wrestling was bigger. And then you had the Monday Night War era. And during the Monday Night War era, you would have one company could draw 4 million people and another company could draw 6 million. And it was only two, but it was still like 10 million people. It got back up from, it went from 10 million to about 6, 7 million. Actually, at one point, to tell you the truth, WWE on like Saturday night's main event and the main event, they were drawing like 20 million people, you know, like themselves, you know, like 15, 20 million people, like way more than people now could ever imagine. But the point being, though, that 10 million people are watching. Now, if you assume that nobody who watches SmackDown watches Raw, all told, and you add it together, TNA and ROH and all this stuff, you're at 5 million people.
Yep.
And let me tell you, people that are watching Raw are watching SmackDown. So you're really only at, I mean, I think you're only a little more than maybe three and a half million people. And then whoever watches occasionally, like some clips for something on YouTube, if that even counts in the manner that we're talking. Wrestling isn't that big and it's continuing to get smaller. If WWE has 3.5 million people, and that's including casuals, and maybe a million of those are hardcores, and that's probably a good number because you're about 1.5 million for the network.
Yeah.
Where is it going to be if we keep on talking about this bad will that they're getting and not a good product? Where's it going to become? And that's when I say, yeah, All In, All Elite Wrestling or New Japan or whoever, or maybe all these companies banding together and creating a new NWA type thing where they're their own independence, but all part of an overall umbrella, which I think would be wonderful. That's when and how WWE is vulnerable. And yes, I don't see any company getting to having the national and international reach of WWE. No. But does that mean the company can't become as big as WWE is in 5 years when they're much smaller than they are now? Yes.
Okay. No, I...
An incredibly long answer. I don't even know how long I went off on that, especially for something I didn't know you were going to ask. But
I think it's a good answer.
I'm never lacking opinions.
No, and that's the reason we have you on. It's you have thoughts and opinions. And for me, I've been watching wrestling since I was 5. So I've been watching wrestling for 20 years. Mm-hmm. You've been watching wrestling, what, double that? 40, 30 years?
Probably close. Yeah, well, not quite 40, but yeah. 30 plus, 35, so more than 35.
So you've seen Hogan, you've seen Brett, you've seen Shawn, you've seen WCW versus Monday Night Raw. Which, by the way, quickly, which side were you on? WWF or WCW?
Well, I was a huge Bret Hart guy, but I wanted WCW because I grew up with WWF being the big company. So I wanted WCW to put them into place even then. And as much as Vince tried to build it like, oh, we're the small company, they're the ones who are, you know, the predatory, this and that. I knew the history of what Vince McMahon had done during the territory days and done to companies, and really some of the things that I don't even think would be legal now that he did, you know. This isn't a good guy. You know, he's mellowed some as he's older, but he was as evil a businessman as you could think. The Vince McMahon character suited him. So
yeah.
I always wanted somebody to give them that ass kicking because I thought they deserved it. But unfortunately, it was somebody who also was just as smug and kind of deserved it too. So I don't know that I was really on anybody's side. I wasn't one of those. I wasn't this is Sega versus Nintendo thing. For me, WCW versus WWE or WWF wasn't that as much. I just watched it and enjoyed it generally.
Okay. I was just kind of curious because you move through and there's certain people that were either diehard WCW or diehard WWF fans. And it's it's curious where people
talk about it. It's like when WCW went out of business, WWE thought their ratings would go up massively because they thought they'd get all those fans. And instead, those fans just left. A few of them came back for TNA, and TNA fans were different than WWE fans at one point. But really, those people just left because their wrestling was gone.
Yeah. Yeah. See, that's the thing, and that's where I'm interested to see where all this goes. And this is why 2019 is an interesting year, because we could see a shift, a slow shift. I don't want to make it sound like this is a big, massive shift and WWE will be going out of business. No, this is, like you said, this is this would be a 10-year game to play out and see how it plays out. As a wrestling fan, I just want good wrestling. That's all I want.
Yeah. For me, that's the most important thing. I know how entertaining great wrestling can be when it's built up and presented right. And I know WWF/WWE has done it at times, and I love it when it does that. But I also know that they're right now, that feels like a really rare thing. So
I think that's why NXT holds such a close place in so many people's hearts, and just people enjoy it because you get good wrestling from there. You get good story. You get a quality show front to back.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And that's
what people want. You know, seeing a great wrestling match is more entertaining than seeing a guy piss in a toilet.
Yeah. Or have a half hour promo. I think the days of a half hour promo should be dead.
Oh, well, I mean, look at the greatest promos of all time. And I bet you, if you listed the 50 greatest promos of all time, I bet you 40 of them are under 10 minutes. I bet you 30 of them might be under 5.
Oh yeah. Cause you only, and I mean, the biggest thing with people now is our attention span is so damn short that you need to hit on that short attention span. And that's where half hour promos just don't cut it anymore. I don't think The Rock could do a half hour promo and entertain anyone right now. I think
weekly. If he came back on, you know, for the first week, sure. Cause it'd be the first time we've seen him in a while. But if he had to do that every week for 52 weeks, no. And you know, that's one of my big problems with Raw is I know every show is going to open with a 20 plus minute talking session.
Yeah.
You know, and with them going, well, this is the matches for tonight, and them telling people, because that's how sports works, or entertainment works, whatever. Like, you wouldn't, nobody, people find out right on the spot what's going to happen to them. It's all stupid. Like,
yeah.
It's all lazy. Much like we talk about the heel, the beat down turnover, it's just lazy booking. And, but it's a guy, they're broken. I don't think they're going to fix it. I don't think Hunter can fix it. Coming in, even doing what he does in NXT, I don't believe he can.
No.
And I just think, you know, years from now, but I really believe this company's, you know, vulnerable.
No, I completely agree with you. I think that when you look at the history, this is a time that you're going to look at and go, man, this is when it really started to go downhill for them. And then this happened. And unless something major happens, which I don't think will, the ship's going to keep going the way it's going. It sees the iceberg, but it wants to keep going for it. So,
yeah, nice Titanic reference. It's very true. Yeah. It's like the finger poke of doom in WCW, and everybody talks about how that was one of the killing blows. But after that, they went on to make, like, you know, for the rest of the year, like a $30 million profit. And
really?
Yet it still was. Yeah. Dude, yeah, after the finger poke, dude, they were huge money still for a long time. Because they booked things like Hulk Hogan versus Roddy Piper, and it drew well, things like that. And they still had, that's the amazing thing is I might be wrong on some of my stuff, but I do know that after they the finger poke of doom, they still made a massive profit that year. 1999 was the finger poke of doom, and 1999 they made like $60 million for the year. And that was like fairly early in the year, that finger poke of doom, if I remember correctly. So yeah, it takes a while. When you're going good, it takes a while. When Steve Austin was first there and Bret Hart was there and they had that great feud and the Canada stuff, they were still getting their ass kicked in the ratings. It took a while for them to, it takes a while to overtake something and to build it up. And it takes a while once something is up for it to come down. But when it happens, you can't reverse it. You can't reverse the fall.
You know what you just described? You described what WWE is in 2018, the Hogan and Roddy, and it's still drawing. Whoa, I don't like this. I don't like the direction this is going. Oh, boy.
What?
Like, just because this is how you described what they did in 99 with WCW. This is what WWE is in 2018.
Oh, absolutely it is. It's totally the same thing. It's that... they're still, this is still drawing, so they think everything is good without realizing that they're laying the foundations for their own doom. The momentum right now, the negative, to make people feel good, there's people that are hardcore WWE fans, bigger than there ever was in WCW, but we talk about people, WCW fans, didn't start watching WWE, they just stopped watching.
Yeah.
The ratings got almost no boost. You know, part of that was the arrogance of thinking they didn't have to bring in the Ric Flairs and Stings and Goldbergs too. But
oh, that was such a missed opportunity.
Well, they just, you know. But yeah, this company is, they really are very much the same. That a few things that are going really, really well make them think that they're in better shape than they are.
Oh God, no. No. They're in trouble. Wow. That's like a reality check. You just hear the Piper and Hogan and you hear, oh yeah, they thought everything was good. And
yeah.
This All Elite Wrestling takes off at all, and if contracts start popping up, start coming up next year, I don't know whose contract could potentially be up, but if people
on a different show, we'll have to speculate.
Yeah.
You know?
But if certain guys start making jumps, like these mid-card guys that WWE's not giving a chance to, they could jump over there and be bigger deals. Mo, thank you for coming on. I did not expect the show.
Dude, we went way long.
I did not expect it to go the way.
Did we talk about, or angles or anything like that? Like nothing.
No, it was just all about everything happening wrestling. And I really wanted a show like this.
We didn't even get into all the details of the people signing, though it doesn't matter because we talk about how it's designed to do one thing and it's not going to work. So
yeah, no, we hit on everything that I wanted to, and everything, and we hit it hit on it in such a different way that I'm quite happy, and I hope the listeners quite enjoyed this. But Mo, thank you for coming on. I always appreciate having you on, and I'm sure that as we inch close, we'll do our end of the year show where we'll run down everything that's happened this year. We'll talk about the good and the bad, and I'm sure that We Talk has plenty of other shows and plenty of other things brewing for the future.
Oh, you bet.
All right, Mo.
Tony Stark knows how to build shit, and I don't.
Oh, well, I'll get you. I know what I'm going to get you for Christmas now.
A wrench set?
Possibly. Potentially. I'll get you, and I'll paint
it. You know what I'm going to get you for Christmas? Same thing I got you last year.
Nothing. Well, you provide a spot for me to do a podcast, so I can't complain.
That's true. It's all on my dime, dude.
So, see, there we go. Mo, thank you for coming on, and thank you for listening, and we will be back soon with more wrestling news and conversation.
Yay!